Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte, Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer. Dustin, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing great, Jim. I have a prop that I wanted to show you. And I know that listeners can't always see this, but I'm a big fan of unique coffee mugs or fun coffee mugs. It makes the day better. And today I've broken out. Do you remember the old sitcom Coach?
Yes, I do.
Yes, I've got this Coach coffee mug. And so it gives me, if people know Hayden Fox's character, they know that he can be a little bit bombastic, over the top, go on tirades. So we'll see what kind of mood I'm in. But I thought, as a fellow football fan and sitcom enjoyer, I thought you might enjoy this mug.
I do. I like that. And is that like a foreshadowing to what we can expect from you today?
Oh, it could be. It could be.
Okay. Well, we'll see. We'll put you on the hot seat a little bit, see how you react to it. Let's start with this. Well, first of all, before we started the show, you and I were chatting, and you started by asking me, gee, Jim, anything going on in Happy Valley this week? And yes, there is. And I said to you, it might be news that may not have gotten out of Happy Valley. Not sure you heard, Dustin, but Penn State has a new defensive coordinator. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I've heard some whisperings, but you know, you never know in today's world of college football what you can depend on and what you can't. So that's why I had to ask. I wasn't sure if this was real or not.
Yes, apparently it is real. Penn State came out with the official announcement. My understanding is Jim Knowles, former Ohio State defensive coordinator, he actually met with the Penn State team on Monday afternoon and spoke to them, which is great. My question here is, from your perspective, looking at the bigger picture of the entire Big Ten, how big a deal is this, Dustin?
I think it's significant because I think it shows just how serious Penn State is about winning a national championship and how dedicated they are to doing whatever it takes. I feel like one of the biggest knocks against Penn State recently, and maybe this dates back further, Jim, you might be able to speak better to it, but has been, you know, maybe their lack of willingness to update facilities, you know, change some things, basically put the investment in, pour in all the resources and all the money. And to me, now I don't know the specifics of his contract. I've heard what was rumored going to be his contract. But to me, this is a win at all costs type of move. Like, I don't know what the situation was at Ohio State, but I'm sure you're not up and willing to just leave a national championship program. So at some point, somebody at Penn State caught wind that maybe Jim Knowles isn't the happiest he's ever been at Ohio State. So let's gauge his interest. So to me, you replace a really good defensive coordinator in Tom Allen, who left for Clemson, with a great defensive coordinator who just helped Ohio State win a national championship. So I think that this is a big time message sent by Penn State in a championship level move.
Well, there's so much to it, so many different areas to go into with it. Let's start with this. Yeah, the reporting seems to be, Dustin, a 3-year contract, averaging $3.1 million, which is a significant step up than what he had been making at Ohio State. And some of the reporting has said Ohio State just didn't seem willing to go that extra step. And just as an aside, I had somebody whisper to me that $3 million might actually become significantly more with some incentives. Now, I'm not sure what those incentives are, how easily attainable they are, but it could potentially be even more money. Now, you mentioned the lateral move going from Ohio State defensive coordinator to Penn State. You also compared him to Tom Allen, who also made a lateral move, defensive coordinator at Penn State to Clemson. One might even argue that each of them went down a step as far as the program they're in. Ohio State, hey, willing to put all the money in, defending national champions now. Penn State, a Final Four team, you know, going to Clemson that, although they have Dabo Sweeney with his national championships, this hasn't necessarily been a great Clemson program. It's been a good program, not great over the last couple of years. So I guess my question is, what is going on here? That's not something we typically see, is it, Dustin?
No, it's not. And that's why I said I don't know what the situation was. Now, I'm going to give you my theory on Tom Allen's departure, because I thought that that was interesting, to say the least. He has tended to be a pretty loyal person. And it makes me wonder, I don't want to get into the weeds with this, Jim, but just as a view from the Goodyear blimp would be, I know Tom Allen is very much his faith is in religion is very important to him. And it makes me wonder if he maybe aligns with Dabo a little bit better than maybe he did. That's not to say that James Franklin is dismissive of it or that they didn't get along, whatever. But maybe there's more of an alignment he has with Dabo and at Clemson than he felt at Penn State. I'm sure that there was maybe a financial reasons for him to depart too. But that was an interesting move to me. But then for the rumor is that there was, and I don't want to spread too much speculation, but then in the case of Jim Knowles, the rumor was that there might have been some disgruntlements between he and some other staff members and things of that nature, and they weren't willing to go up and make the same offer after he just helped them win a national title. So I don't know. It's an interesting time, but I did not see either of those guys moving on from their respective programs. As I think, to me, Jim Knowles is probably a bigger shock just because of what happened last year and Ohio State's unwillingness to match Penn State's offer, basically.
Well, you talk about not wanting to speculate too much. Sorry, that horse is out of the barn in our area. And it's been fairly well reported that Jim Knowles and Larry Johnson at Ohio State didn't see eye to eye, and that apparently Ryan Day and Larry Johnson are fairly close. So if he's picking sides, it seems to be that's the way to do it. I wonder if some of this is, one of my colleagues, he expressed this about Tom Allen was, you know what? It wasn't like necessarily Penn State was looking to make a change, but they probably gave him a hug. They didn't slam the door on him, but they held the door open as he walked out. And I get that kind of same feeling. And some of the conversation is that James Franklin has been known to keep his binder, his coaching file, that when he goes to events, he constantly has the Rolodex ready, you know, always checks people out. And that Jim Knowles is someone he's been interested in for years, definitely back to his Oklahoma State days. And that if there was just the door was cracked open a little bit, seemed like there was mutual interest between the two of them.
Yeah, I mean, they had to make that call pretty quick, right? Shortly after everything happened in Ohio State winning it all. And that's how you have to be in this day and age. Like, you have to be prepared for every level of change, whether it's with a member of your coaching staff or whether it's a player, whatever it might be. So that's like one of those things where James Franklin kind of calls himself a crazy person, like about the details and the way he operates and things. This is where that pays off. Cause could you imagine if they lose Tom Allen and they're not prepared and they have to take a flyer on somebody that they're not? Now, Penn State, you're going to still be able to attract some of the best names out there, but it doesn't always work. And I think Jim Knowles is a guy who's been in enough places and it's worked at enough spots that you would say, this is a really good hire. We have a lot of faith that our defense is going to be as good, if not better, than it was last season because we've got a new defensive coordinator. So it's not always easy to do that, but that's where James Franklin's attention to detail and like his self-proclaimed, like, I think he said a few years ago, if you guys thought I was crazy before, just wait until now. Like, I think that that's where that pays off.
And he's been looking to upgrade how Penn State reacts to everything, you know, the facilities, you know, money for the coaching staff, obviously now money for the players with the NIL, all of those things. And this opportunity, it reminds me a little bit. Remember a couple years ago when Brian Kelly and Lincoln Riley as head coaches made what appeared to be lateral moves, made me wonder if it would be a trend. Would we be seeing more of it? I think this is now at the coordinator level. But I'll ask the same question. Do you think this is a little bit of a precedent? We might start seeing more of this, if not this year, where the cycle may be winding up for coaches making changes. But as we go forward, at $3 million, did Jim Knowles and Penn State just set a new standard for coordinator positions?
Probably, because that tends to be what happens in these situations. Like whoever it was, I don't like Dabo when he got a $100-some million deal. I think it was $95 million, just short of a hundred. That kind of set a new precedent, right? Like every time somebody makes a ridiculous move like this, it just kind of sets the standard for the rest of college football. So I wouldn't be surprised. Now, I don't think that's going to be what you see every school pay because they're not going to be able to afford that. But if you're going to be serious about winning it all and you want to bring in some of the best names, I think that that's going to be the asking price or around there moving forward. That's just how in the history of college football, that's just kind of how it's worked. Everybody, when you see something jump up in terms of price, a lot of times a lot of schools will follow in that direction.
And there'll be coordinators who succeed, become the next hot name next year. We'll say, hey, look, there's the standard. It's been set. $3 million for the best coordinator. And the only smart guy, was it Nick Saban who had it set up where he had to be among the, what, top two or three compensated head coaches? That's the way to do it.
Yeah, if you can draw that line, then more power to you, because that shows how much power you have within a school or within the sport.
And what it really shows you is it's good to be Nick Saban.
I don't think anybody's disputed that before.
All right, that is it for quarter one of the show. When we come back, let's talk some specifics about Jim Knowles and how he coordinates the defense. We'll do that when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin Schutte, Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer. I'm Jim Galante, quarter number two of our show. And Dustin, we were talking about obviously the Jim Knowles move from Ohio State defensive coordinator to Penn State defensive coordinator. And it's amazing at Ohio State, this kind of change. You just won a national championship. Your defense was number one in the country. This is the coordinator you came in to do exactly that. Over the 3 years, the Ohio State defense just got better and better. Yep, a lot of talent there. But obviously Jim Knowles was part of it. And it seemed like there was a personality clash. And I think we've seen a bit of that at Penn State. I think we saw it with Mike Yurcich when he left as the offensive coordinator. I think with Tom Allen, they got some of that also. You said, probably a better culture fit for him in Clemson. So But when you winning usually fixes everything, Dustin. That's the part that surprises me from the Ohio State standpoint.
Yeah, I agree. And this is why it was when I first saw that Jim Knowles and Penn State had communication, I thought it was like a joke. I thought it was some sort of April Fool's thing come early, because you tend not to see this, especially we're talking about Ohio State. It's not like we're talking about it would make sense if this was Indiana, if Indiana's defensive coordinator was taking the job at Penn State, right? Like you can tell that that's a step up in terms of program pedigree. And I don't know that it would be a step down to go from Ohio State to Penn State, but it's certainly like a lateral move. And I don't know. I think Penn State does have their same resources. They just, for some reason, don't use them as well, but they're starting to. So credit to them. It's very interesting to me. And the fact that they could have, here's what maybe this speaks to just how talented that roster was, Jim, to have like clearly some sort of staff issues and some frustration between the staff, and for those kids to still play lights out in the playoff, like to put everything kind of behind them and just focus on the task at hand. That's what's really impressive. So again, I could probably say this a million times, but it just doesn't seem real. Like it's like you just won a national championship. Ohio State wasn't willing to keep you on staff. You were a big reason why they were able to get things done. It's more surprising to me that they like their offensive issues were a lot of the trouble when they lost those games and struggled in those games, not the defense, but you know, whatever. Personality clashes are a big deal.
Yeah. You know, when I try to look at this, like, okay, what's the world like in private industry? And you have those kind of differences in private industry, you know, think about your own job and people you may not like in the workplace. And why should this be any different? But maybe it's just that it becomes a little bit more public now. And speaking of which, the one last note on Knowles leaving and going elsewhere, I don't think we've ever heard anything like this. Well, Oklahoma has a leg up because Jim Knowles' fiance is from Oklahoma.
This is the absurdity that a lot of times we see this with fans, right? They try to make reasons as to why somebody's going to come to their school, but a lot of times it's usually the almighty dollar more than anything.
Usually it is. All right. Before we get to how this affects Penn State's off the field as far as just representing that they're going for it, let's talk a little bit on the field. Let's talk about Jim Knowles. What do we know about him? What do we know about his style?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you know about him is he is able to turn just about any defense into one of the best in the country. I mean, he had a lot of success there towards the end at Oklahoma State, and then he hit the ground running at Ohio State. And as you mentioned earlier, Jim, that defense just got better and better as his time went on. And I think what he will bring a 4-2-5 look to Penn State. And I think he's got a unique way of like, and he's very good at matching up against other teams, right? He knows their weaknesses inside and out. It seems he's very good at bringing pressure. I think that his teams are very aggressive in forcing turnovers. At the same time, they're also just very fundamentally sound. Like go back to that Bowling Green game where it seemed like Penn State missed every tackle they tried. Jim Knowles' teams don't do that. And so I may have misspoke when I said they can be aggressive at forcing turnovers, but they don't sacrifice a lot of their tackling. They don't, you know, miss assignments. They'd rather have a broken up pass, you know, than giving up 8 or 9 yards. Right. So like, it's almost like a conservative aggressive, like they just want to get guys tackled to the ground. So it's going to be unique and interesting to see how it translates at Penn State. But like I said, it's translated to other places. So I can't imagine it's not going to work there.
I believe it was you who told me you thought in the past, Tom Allen with some of his Indiana teams might sacrifice some of the fundamentals like tackling, looking for the turnover and the big play.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's what Tom Allen. Yeah, that's what Tom Allen preached at Indiana, because, and I think it fit there for a while, because Indiana typically didn't have the athletes to compete with teams like Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. So how do you kind of even the score? It's creating extra possessions and going for those turnovers. It was costly to them because they didn't tackle well all the time. But Knowles' defense, like you, if you look at them sometimes, you look in the stat column, you say, ah, they've only forced 6 turnovers this season. They've only, you know, done this. But they get pressure on quarterbacks consistently because they're aggressive. They bring guys. They're very good at getting guys to the ground. And then everybody just seems to know their assignment. And that's a huge difference. Guys just don't get open. You don't see them, you know, surrendering 50-yard touchdown passes, not giving up the big play. And so I think, especially at times during James Franklin's tenure, I think sometimes Penn State has been susceptible to giving up those big plays, and that's kind of bit them in the past. So I think that this will be I don't want to say a welcome change, because it's not like Penn State's defenses have been bad. They just maybe haven't been at the elite level that a Georgia or an Ohio State has played at in recent seasons.
Well, I think to your point about giving up the big play, I think there are Penn State fans will be watching a game and see the opponent put in like a 3rd and 15, 3rd and 18, and jokingly say, oh, the opponent has Penn State's defense right where they want them, because they would give up those big third down plays. And we've seen some of that. I think also the aggressive play, the putting pressure on the quarterback, that's what we saw here two seasons ago with Manny Diaz, with a very aggressive defense. And when you have the athletes that Penn State does, the speed is part of each level of the defense. That would seem like a good match between the talent there and what Jim Knowles wants to do.
Yeah, I think so, because a lot of times Penn State's best defensive players are along the edge. And you saw that was Ohio State's strength last season, right? So I think that if you're able to get pressure on the quarterback, and Knowles does a good job of incorporating his linebackers into those situations too, and bringing in and blitzing. And so I think that I'm not trying to say that Penn State has the same level of talent of Ohio State, but it's close, right? So like, I think you can schematically do a lot of the same things, or he can do a lot of the same things that he implemented at Ohio State, and it will work seamlessly at Penn State. Like Penn State's defense has been really, really good, and they've got the athletes. Like, this is, to me, this is why I think it's a lateral move, because I think that the talent there is comparable. And so it's not like he's going to have to change a lot of things that he does defensively to fit his talent. I think he can go in with what he wants to do and make an immediate impact.
And they do have those kind of athletes, like I said, at every level. You look at the tackle position, and you don't think of those guys as being quick and athletic until you watch Zane Durant play at linebacker. A guy like Tony Rojas is very athletic. AJ Harris as a cornerback. So they do seem to have those weapons. The other part of this whole equation is, how does this – you talked about it a bit earlier, that this is Penn State now, a school that seems to hesitate in some of these things. And I think it goes back to Joe Paterno's days, where he never got the highest salary. He never worried about having the best facilities and those things. And there was also this Penn State success with honor. We don't cheat. We do it right. And compensating athletes always was, well, that's what the other guy does in cheating. Well, now it's not cheating, but I think there was still within the Penn State culture this, that there's, it rubbed Penn Staters the wrong way. Does this kind of thing, and the return of so many players, paying a coordinator more money than anybody else in the country, does this signal, hey, Penn State seems to be turning the page, and whether it's recruits, fan base, opposing teams, have to recognize that, you know what, Penn State is in this thing to win the whole thing.
Yeah, I think so. I think that was the number one message it sent. Like, okay, James Franklin is doing basically what everybody wants him to do, and Penn State is willing to do what they need to do to win a national championship. I think one of the things that Franklin maybe doesn't get enough credit for is kind of changing that mindset at Penn State. Like, he's basically come out and said, hey, we need better facilities. We want to keep recruiting at this high level. We want to compete with the other teams. We need better facilities. We need more, you know, we need better access. We need more donors. And I don't think he's like putting blame on anybody when he's saying this stuff. I think what he's saying is this is the world of college football now. We can't stand idly by and not have up-to-date locker rooms. We have to have state-of-the-art practice facilities. We got to make these improvements if we want to stay where we are and catch up to teams like Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, and be in that conversation. So I'm sure it's been a tough job for him to do that, but he's got a track record of success, and he's been loyal to the program. There's been ample opportunity for him to up and leave if he wasn't happy, but he's kind of staying this course and has just said, like, this is what it's going to take. And Penn State has and is continuing to respond. I don't want to say to his demands, mm-hmm. but basically to his, what would you call those, requests?
Well, it probably depends on who you talk to. Just like True. The idea of, you know, his loyalty to the program. There have been a couple times when there have been threats of him to leave, depending on who you talk to, how big a threat that was. All right, that's it for quarter number two. We got lots more to go with this, then stick with us. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. We are talking Penn State football. And Dustin, we've been talking about Jim Knowles making the change over to Penn State. That's a big deal. But the other part of this equation is it's not just Jim Knowles coming over. Penn State is now doing the Ohio State model otherwise too. Many players that could have made the jump to the NFL, they are sticking around for another year. They want to, you know, run it back again. Is that kind of the model anymore to win a national championship? We kind of saw it at Michigan 2 years ago. We saw it last year with Ohio State. Did they give us the model on how to do it?
Yeah, I think so. And these are not the same sport. So give me a second, because I'm going to make my comparison here. To me, when you watch the Final Four in the NCAA basketball championship, a lot of times those teams that win are the teams with the experienced players, the teams with the best guards, teams that have that chemistry. And I think you've seen that at least with the last 2 years in college football with Michigan and Ohio State. Those teams had been teams that had a lot of chemistry. They had a lot of guys that had played together a long time, especially on the offensive and defensive lines at both Michigan and Ohio State. And so, yeah, you can throw in some pieces from the transfer portal. You can throw in a kid like a Jeremiah Smith, who's a once-in-a-lifetime wide receiver. But I think the bulk of what your roster has to look like, especially in the trenches where the chemistry is probably the most important at those two positions, if you can bring those guys back, I think, and you can get juniors and seniors and fifth-year guys to return instead of going to the NFL, I think that's huge. And to me, this is one of the kind of the cool things about NIL. Now, I know that people are going to say, well, kids shouldn't make X amount of dollars, you know, but it's also preventing them from making a bad decision and potentially taking a leap to the NFL and maybe not getting drafted. And instead, you got places like now Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, where those guys come back, make a little bit of money, and now they can win a national championship. So I think that is the formula. I don't know if that's been the case, but like we've seen teams that have just been I think a good example of this is actually Indiana this year. A big reason why Kurt Cignetti had so much success, in addition to his schedule being pretty light, if you want to put it that way, was the fact that a lot of those kids that they brought in and transferred were from James Madison. So they knew what Kurt Cignetti was going to do. They had been playing with each other for 3, 4, 5 years. They understood each other. They knew their tendencies. They knew what they were going to do. And so I think when you look at it, the experience and the chemistry is invaluable. So you can see teams like Texas A&M a few years ago under Jimbo Fisher. Remember, they brought in an elite, the highest ranked recruiting class in the history of college football. And what happened? They went like 6-6 or whatever the record was. I don't want to go back that far in time. But to me, you still have to recruit high-level guys. You still have to maybe get a guy or two in the transfer portal to address a need. But if you can return a bulk of your team, you are in really good shape to at least compete for a national championship.
Well, I think the whole paradigm is changing here. You see, I think basketball, I'll go to that a bit also, Dustin, where you had the one and done players, and the NBA drafts those guys. They may not be ready. It may take them 2 or 3 years, but they're the best talent. And in fact, they would avoid drafting seniors because it's like, heck, if he hasn't come out to the NBA already, obviously there's an issue with him, and he's already 24. He can't grow, get any better. Now, what I think we're seeing in football is on the draft versus coming back another year, before NIL, your choices were come back to college, make no money at all, or bet on yourself that you could get drafted by the NFL, even if it's the 4th, 5th, 6th round, and you take that chance. Now, and they know pretty well what your draft status is going to be.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to be a 5th or 6th round pick, you now can get the money, that same money in college. The difference being it's guaranteed, though, in college, where in the NFL, those aren't guaranteed contracts, Dustin.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's a lot more incentive now to return to school. And it goes across all sports. But I think in football, there were so many kids, and I'm sure that there still are. But there would be – I remember we used to do lists of all the, you know, basically underclassmen who still had eligibility left who went to the NFL draft who didn't get drafted. And it's just like, well, those kids can't do anything now. And – I kind of wish that the football rule would have changed, but now I think now those kids don't have to take that chance. As you said, they can come back to school. They can earn a little bit of money. Maybe in some cases it won't be as much as if they got an NFL contract, but it's guaranteed. And you can try to boost your stock for the next year's NFL draft. So that has been a huge benefit of NIL in my opinion.
Well, in boosting your status in the draft, don't have to look any further than Tyler Warren with Penn State. If you followed Penn State closely, you knew who he was and you knew how talented he was. But you know what? There was a pretty good tight end in front of him. He wasn't going to get the targets and all of that. And I'm not sure where he would have been drafted a year ago, but not only is it NIL money to come back, but he's a surefire, not just first round, but now it looks like first half of the first round draft pick. How much money did Tyler Warren make himself by coming back another year?
A lot. I wish I knew the specifics of the contracts off the top of my head, but he certainly made a lot. And that's an example I think a lot of people could probably look to and say, Yep, that's a good reason to come back. And instead of being a 6th or 7th round guy, maybe I can, you know, and you're not always going to have a Tyler Warren situation, but maybe you can get to 3rd or 4th round. And that's, you know, that's a step up too.
I think so. And I'll look at a guy like Drew Aller, who, you know, the draft projections for him have been all over the place this year. But come back with a solid year next year, he could be at the top of the draft. Speaking of quarterbacks, how's that for a smooth segue there, Dustin? You're talking about having experienced teams, and there's no doubt, as you mentioned, along the lines, the defensive line, and probably even more specifically the offensive line. But I feel like the quarterback position is one of those where to have an experienced guy in college, you saw it the couple of years ago with Bo Nix and Michael Penix. They weren't from those schools at Oregon and Washington, but they had so many starts elsewhere, and they come over. Having that experience this past year, we saw it, Notre Dame's quarterback, Ohio State's quarterback, the Texas quarterback. So many of these guys on the most successful teams, even if they are not homegrown, they are guys with a lot of starts under their belt. And not only does that seem to work out in college, but Bo Nix, Michael Penix are examples going to the NFL. The more starts you have in college seems to correlate to a more successful hit the ground running in the NFL.
Yeah, and it's always interesting to me because I never am a good gauge of who's going to be a good NFL quarterback and who's not. But I think that that experience pays off. And the fact that those guys, I think what also helps is in probably the older days in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, I say older days, when that long. I like to think it wasn't that long ago, but I know it was, Jim. but you basically had a quarterback for two or three seasons who ran one playbook, one offensive scheme. Now these kids like Will Howard was at Kansas State and Ohio State. You had Dylan Gabriel, who was at UCF and Oklahoma and then Oregon. So I think that's also a big factor. And Drew Aller would also fit that category, right? He had Yursich when he first got there as the offensive coordinator, and then they bring in Andy Kolonicki. So he's had to learn on the fly too. So I think not only experience, but I think now with we talked about, basically coordinators shift all the time. Head coaches move around. Players hit the transfer portal. I think kids are seeing more than one playbook in their college career. And I think that's also been beneficial with the transition from college to pro as well. But to your point, I think Penn State's in a really good spot with their quarterback position. I'd still want to see a little bit more because I think at times Drew Aller still got a little panicky and tried to force things a little too much. And maybe that's just recency bias. Maybe it's because the Notre Dame loss is still fresh on my mind. But I will be curious to see what he does with another offseason, another year with Andy Kotelnicki, how much more comfortable he is. Because I think there's no doubt, Jim, from his first year as a starter to his second year was a pretty significant leap in the right direction.
It's why there are Penn State fans who actually wish he had moved on so they could move on to another quarterback. Yes, you'll always get that. But it's just like with James Franklin, and we get the narrative, he can't win a big game. Drew Aller is beginning to suffer that same fate. And now that we've hit the off seasons, one of my things on my to-do list is I want to go compile his statistics in the quote-unquote big games. And it's pretty easy to quantify which games are the big games. Ohio State, yeah. Michigan, Oregon, the playoff games. And just compile those stats and see where they're at. Now, you brought up a good point. I'm very bullish on Drew Aller. I like him. I think what I like best about him is his ability to get better. From year one to year two, we saw plenty of improvements, and it's been consistent. I've talked to people who watched him through his high school career and saw the same kind of advancements. He was not highly sought after early on in his high school career. He built on that to become that five-star guy. He then improved in college. I see no reason why we can't see more of that improvement going into next season, Dustin.
Yeah, I think everybody, for whatever reason, there used to be this mindset, Jim, where if you had a quarterback as a starter as a sophomore, you'd look at him and say, okay, can't wait to see what he looks like next season. And then when he makes gradual improvements or a significant improvement, then he's coming back as a senior and you'd say, oh boy, I can't wait to see what this kid does next year with another year under his belt. And now it's just kind of like we've gotten to this place where it's just, well, what you see when he's a freshman is what you're going to get when he's a senior. And it's like, no, it doesn't always work like that. Some kids, yes, you'll get the same player for 4 years. Sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes that's a bad thing. But there's other kids who take developmental steps, and sometimes it just takes a little longer. And I think that's the case for Drew Aller.
All right, we got one more segment to go. Stick with us.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. It's quarter number four of our show. We're talking about college football moving forward. How do you build that team that wins a national championship? And I think we've seen in these last couple of years, and this is what we were talking about, at the quarterback position, having that experienced guy, those guys have been around. Now, often they've come through the transfer portal, and Riley Leonard, Will Howard, the two national championship game quarterbacks, they both fit that profile. They were starters elsewhere, made the move, Notre Dame, Ohio State, very thankful for that. But an interesting thing now, looking ahead to next year, there's several way too early 25 rankings, and I just grabbed one that was convenient to me, ESPN, and I took note of something. It's interesting. They had as their top four Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, and Notre Dame. Yes, the final four from this past year.
Yep,
then
sure.
Team five and team six, Georgia and Oregon. The two teams that won the two biggest conferences, the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference. So a lot of the same old, as Penn State people, probably happy to see, well, Penn State now wedged in with that group, which they weren't before. But what's interesting, and it fits what we've been talking about with the quarterbacks, Penn State is unique among those six teams. They have the returning veteran quarterback. I don't think any of those other five of the six teams that are ranked the top six, they're going with a young quarterback, it appears, Dustin.
Yeah, and that's, you know, we'll see if it's more beneficial or not. And because these teams have been in those situations, like Dan Lanning, I will say this no matter what, and maybe it's not the right thing to say or the wrong, I don't know. But like, I trust Dan Lanning now because he was able to figure out Bo Nix. Like, Bo Nix was not a good quarterback at Auburn, and he turned that guy into a potential Heisman candidate winner. So, yeah, I think, to me, you want to be in that position where you have a guy who's returning, but these guys have especially proven Texas with Steve Sarkisian. Obviously, Ryan Day at Ohio State's done it a number of times. They've been able to turn transfer quarterbacks into star players. But it's so rare anymore to see a guy like Drew Aller who sticks around and is going to play, you know, be a third-year starter this coming year. So I'm really interested to see what that means for Penn State. I don't think it's a – I obviously think it's a good thing, but how do those other teams, whether it's a younger guy, a transfer guy, what do they do in the offseason? And let's just throw this out there too. There used to be, before we had all this nonsense, there used to be – okay, I have some semblance of what the next season might look like. We at least have an idea of who's going to be on the roster. We have no idea what these teams are going to look like next season. We have zero clue.
Well, but here's the thing that's interesting, different than last year, where we saw, you know, Dan Lanning, he brings in Dylan Gabriel, and Ohio State brings in Will Howard, and Notre Dame brings Riley Leonard. I don't know where those guys – let's take a look. And let's start with the Big Ten, where we and you especially are more familiar. If you look at Oregon, are they going with Dante Moore? Now, he's a transfer from UCLA, but a youngster who – I guess he did start at UCLA as a true freshman, but that's where they're going. It appears Ohio State is going to go onto their in-house young quarterbacks that's inexperienced. Where is Michigan going? Is it going to be the highly touted freshman, Bryce Underwood? So where are the teams within Big Ten? Or do you think those teams might still be looking for that transfer portal quarterback?
Well, that's what I was going to say is like, who knows what might happen in during the spring? Like we could still see there's still that spring window where players could enter the transfer portal. So there's a chance that you have a quarterback who was not available during the winter and then becomes available in the spring. So I think they move forward with what they have on their roster and who they might start, but I wouldn't rule out anything. And as everybody says tampering, but I don't know how you control this quote unquote tampering. So if there's a guy out there and if Ohio State gets to the spring game and decides we can't win with this guy that we're bringing in, there will be some text messages and some phone calls going out to maybe urge a guy or two to enter the transfer portal. Like that's just the world we live in. So maybe it won't happen. I don't know, but with college football, I would not be surprised by anything that happens. And so I don't think you're ruling out picking up a transfer, even though we're past the winter stages of the transfer portal season.
Well, I don't think we have enough history to establish, hey, this is the way it's going to work. However, small sample size, maybe you could help me on this. I don't think a lot of quarterbacks enter the after the spring. I don't, go back like last year with Will Howard, Riley Leonard, and the year before when it's Bo Nix and Michael Penix and all of these guys. Don't most of them make after during the winter period? And it would seem silly, use an example of Will Howard with Kansas State. And I don't even remember when he left, but I'm pretty sure it was during the winter, I think. Would it make sense for him to go through all the spring practice with Kansas State as a starter to just up and leave and head off to Ohio State? It doesn't seem as if that is the course many of these quarterbacks take.
No, I don't think it is. I guess my point is if you get one of these power broker schools, like an Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, whoever it might be, and they think, I don't know that we can win at a high level with the guy we have under center, with the quarterback room we have. All I'm saying is there might be a push to get somebody to enter the transfer portal. That's all I'm saying. I don't think it's common that they enter in the spring. I don't think it's common that they would transfer in the spring. I think it's just we've reached those times where if I need a quarterback, I'm going to at least give somebody a call or shoot a text out or whatever I need to do, because the NCAA doesn't punish for tampering that we know of.
Okay, so you were saying I understand your point that it could still happen. You could see if Ohio State's not happy with their quarterbacks, might they get a message over to Arch Manning? Hey, yeah, what are you making over at Texas? Whatever you're making, we could add to it.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly my point. And again, I don't know that it's going to happen. I don't know that it's highly likely that happens. I'm just saying I wouldn't rule it. We wouldn't rule it out based on the landscape that we have currently.
Now, you make the good point that we really don't know what these teams are going to look like next year. There's still things that can happen in the portal and so on. But if we look at the Big Ten, who are the teams that you're looking at and say the usual suspects? You expect Penn State to be good with the returning folks. Ohio State is always good. I think Oregon has now reached that point. You mentioned Dan Lanning. I trust him to put out a pretty good team there. Where do you see some of these other teams that have question marks? And I'll bring up a couple of them that I'm curious what your thoughts are. Indiana, who had that surprising year last year. USC, who had the surprising year in a negative way. Michigan, who you called it from the beginning that they were a 500 team. Illinois, who made some noise last year also. Who among those teams are you particularly watching?
I'm really interested in Illinois because they've got Luke Altmyer back. They've got a lot of their team back from last season. and they won 10 games. And that's a team that I think, or a program that I think Brett Bielema has heading in a really good direction. So I'm really interested to see what we see out of Illinois next season, because I don't know if there's ever been this much excitement and hype around that program. So he's done a really good job in his short time there. So that was before you even asked me, who am I looking at? That was one of the teams that I think is really going to be intriguing heading into next season. One that I think could be kind of like, now I'm going to give them the kiss of death here, right? Because this is what we said about Rutgers last season. That to me would be like, if you were to say, okay, out of the non-traditional teams in the Big Ten, who do you think could maybe sneak into that? You know, who could be next year's Indiana? I think Illinois is a candidate. Now, Indiana is very interesting to me as well, but on another reason, because as I mentioned earlier, they were successful because Kurt Cignetti brought a lot of his players from James Madison. A lot of those guys were fifth, sixth, seventh year seniors. They had played a lot of football together, been part of some really good football teams. A lot of those guys have now moved on, and they are rebuilding again through the transfer portal, but they're not going to have that same chemistry. So what does it look like? And I think that this is where you'll see how good of a coach Kurt Cignetti is. And I think he's a very good football coach, but is he 11-1 good, or are they going to be somewhere where they're 7-5, 9-3, somewhere in that neighborhood? I think Indiana is still going to be a team to be reckoned with. I just don't know that they're going to be, excuse me, as good as they were a year ago, because of all the pieces that they have to replace.
Well, I'm curious. Now, they are bringing in a transfer portal quarterback, correct, at Indiana?
Yes, they are. And I can't think of his name off the top of my head, Jim.
Fernando Mendoza?
From Cal, yes.
And, you know, I, playing for Cal, don't know too much about him, but it's, Could you see that same, you know, Curtis Rourke magic with another quarterback? I'm real curious about teams that disappointed last year, but you expect more from them. I'm thinking USC and Michigan, and I think there's pressure on both programs, particularly Lincoln Riley's got to be feeling the heat out there.
Yeah, I think so. I think, he had a really good first season. And then it was a really disappointing second year with Caleb Williams. You had the returning Heisman Trophy winner, and you went, well, I think it was 8-5. And then this past season, they were a 500 football team. Like, you've got to be better than that. They're not, USC ain't paying you all that money to go 7-6 at the end of the season, right? So he's got a lot of pressure this season. I think there's a little bit, and I'm intrigued by Michigan now, because I think as much as I called Michigan being 500 because of all they replaced, I think they were playing some really good football at the end of the season. They almost beat Indiana. They did beat Ohio State. They beat Alabama. And that was kind of a depleted roster in that what used to be RIP, the Outback Bowl. I don't remember what the name of that bowl game is now, but who cares? But yeah, I'm intrigued by those teams as well.
Yeah, that finish has to encourage the Michigan Wolverine fans. All right, that is it. Thank you, Dustin. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy cafe tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.